This isn't about, oh, this is the sneaky way to get you to want sex like you should. This is about you being truer to yourself to sort out what you really want. What do you want in your marriage? Do you want this marriage, right? Do you want to develop your sexuality or not? But to start getting clear about who you are so that you can make choices that you are at peace with, that you feel good about, that are about being the person you desire to be on this planet.
Welcome to Conversations with Dr. Jennifer, a collection of interviews on the topics of relationships, sexuality, spirituality, and more, all featuring Dr. Finlayson Fife.
Welcome, everybody. Glad to have you here and glad to talk to women, especially of the Art of Desire course. Just before we start, I just want to tell you that we are having an Art of Desire retreat in September, just outside of Portland in Hillsboro, which is a beautiful suburb just southwest of Portland, kind of looks like Tuscany in the United States. That's from Monday to Thursday, and we'll be talking about a lot of the themes that I'll be talking about tonight, but about self-development and sexual self-development and how deeply connected the two are. This is a course I've been teaching since 2014, I think, or maybe 13 when I first taught it. But just my thinking continues to evolve, and having written the book also has really kind of continued to shape my thinking on this. So this retreat will be just new materials. It's the same basic structure, but there's more content around women's sexuality. And I'll be talking about some of those things tonight, or at least touching on them. So let me just talk for a moment about desire in general and then women's desire overall. But while we can certainly choose how we engage in our lives, we can choose what kinds of circumstances we put ourselves in, we can determine the kind of person we want to be or how committed we want to be to our marriage or to developing our sexuality. Like, we have control over all of those things, but we don't have control over the feeling of desire. So we can't make ourselves want something, and we can't make ourselves be aroused. We can, again, we can do things that might invite it, that might encourage it, but it's not something we have control over. And we don't have control over whether or not we orgasm. We can do things that might invite it, but we can't make ourselves do it. And so it's just important to understand that, because sometimes we drive ourselves crazy trying to feel something we don't feel. And the very effort of trying to make it happen makes it impossible. It's a little bit like trying to get yourself to fall asleep will make sure you don't fall asleep. You can shape the conditions. You can do things that might invite it and encourage it, but it's not an act of will. And so important to understand it. And a lot of what I talk about in the Art of Desire, the course, and especially the revised version of this, is about what those conditions are and why they matter to understand them. Because a lot of us are trying to solve things, but we're doing it exactly in a way that keeps it ever elusive. It keeps it further from us. And part of the reason this is because we've often defined our sexuality in terms of men's sexuality or relative to men's sexuality and the way that most men relate to sex, which is quite different than the way that most women relate to sex. And so when you're trying to make yourself be more like your husband, or you have a husband who thinks you should be more like him, it ends up, you know, that you feel the sense of constriction and that you can't be yourself and that there's something wrong with you. And all of that makes sex feel less and less and less desirable. We can't control whether or not we feel desire. And when we try to make ourselves feel desire or try to make ourselves get aroused in this kind of, like, when we're working for something, we are feeling a lot of self-judgment around it, then our desire rebels, because our sexuality wants to be free. Desire has to emerge out of a sense of freedom. And so sexual desire cannot be constrained or demanded. And in addition, when we really desire, okay, from it's being true to ourselves. It's the sense that I can be myself here, and this is an act of self to come towards you. It's something that I want, right? We don't want to self-betray in sex. We don't want to take care of someone, manage their needs. Okay, so a lot of people get through the act of sex and they're maybe doing it because their spouse has needs and they think that's kind of their role. And you might even orgasm, but the sense of like desire or passion or something coming from your soul doesn't happen that way. It has to feel like, I want to be here. In fact, that's why sometimes people have fantasies that are about breaking the rules or about doing something you're not supposed to do, because never is it more clear that you choose it than when you're breaking a rule to do it, right? And so again, our sexual minds love freedom. So the problem is a lot of the meanings that many of us inherited around sexuality and women's sexuality has nothing to do with freedom. It has to do with duty and expectation and being a proper wife and taking care of needs and never saying no and all the things that snuff women's eroticism. To feel free, we can't be betraying ourselves or we won't desire. And we won't betray ourselves to be in connection, right? We may, again, get through the act, but not feel the sense of passion and connection and ease that really good sex is about. So, you know, I have a new course, Sex Worth Wanting, and it's very much about what is the really good sex, the sex you want to stay up later for. Okay, well, it has to do with this sense of freedom and ease and ability to be yourself and to feel that you have a friend there at the same time, right? And so we like sex when it makes us feel good about ourselves. And again, a lot of us are relating to sex in a way that makes us feel bad about ourselves. So it's no wonder we don't want it, okay? So who we are in our lives and our marriages, how we relate to ourselves in general, how we relate to our desires in general, how we relate to important others, including a spouse, all of those questions are going to deeply shape our sense of freedom and therefore shape our desire for closeness to another person. So the next several questions are all related to this theme, and I'll take up each of them and explain in what way. But this person says, I think my main questions are about desire. I feel stuck trying to figure out what I really desire. After 40 years of marriage and family, I'm not really sure how to separate what I'm supposed to do with what I actually desire to do in my life, not just in my sex life. When I listen to the Art of Desire course, it sometimes feels like figuring out my desire is just a way to make me want sex more often. I usually enjoy sex. So you're kind of turning it into the obligation frame again, which is understandable. I usually enjoy sex. I can orgasm and I do it regularly, but I do not think about it all the time. I feel like this makes me somehow lacking. I feel like my husband is disappointed that I'm not thinking about sex as often as he is. In some ways, I feel like the Art of Desire course is trying to fix that in me so he will be happier with me. I need a little help understanding how figuring out my desires helps me. Okay. So I'm going to talk in a little bit more about the differences between men's and women's sexuality. But this idea that a husband's disappointed because you're not thinking about sex all the time is one of the differences between men and women. I think men are much, because they have a lot of testosterone, are much more likely to think about sex than women are. Women's sexuality tends to just kind of go dormant in between sexual experiences. And it's not because they're not invested. Even women who love sex, right, are more likely for their sexuality to just kind of like step back a little bit while they are busy taking care of kids and doing all these things. And so it doesn't mean your husband can't be disappointed or wish that you were more into it. But it also really starts to help to see that men and women are going to usually approach sexuality from different positions. And nothing is going wrong with that. It's just helping to better understand it helps you to not pathologize it and to see how you can build a bridge across those differences, how you can actually work within those differences and value them actually. So I think women have gotten a really bad rap around sexuality because not only have they often been taught it around obligation, which kills the libido that could naturally be there, but also because the way women generally orient to sexuality, which is pickier, which is more concerned about the quality than the quantity, generally speaking, that is slower to arouse, but much more capable of pleasure once aroused, that in our misunderstanding of the ways that women are different from men, we've often brought on ourselves and been judged in a way that kills it even further. And so we have to better appreciate the gifts in women's sexuality and the wisdom that's in it and how heterosexual couples can work together better to cultivate sex that both want. So putting that question aside for a minute, let me just speak to the larger question that this person's asking, which is, what is this? Are you just trying to get me to figure out what I desire so that I will desire this thing that I should want? And that framing of should is a very understandable default, but it is part of the problem. That is that I feel like I should want these other things and I feel controlled by those demands and I don't feel free to be myself or to figure out who I am, because what if it's the wrong answer? What if I don't want the right thing or I don't want what my husband wants me to want? And so the reason why it matters and why this is kind of the backbone of the course is that, you know, when in my dissertation research, when I was developing this course, I was really thinking a lot about the women that I had interviewed in my dissertation and recognizing that the women who really thrived in sexuality, who really enjoyed sex, they had a solid sense of self. They took themselves seriously, including their non-desire, right, for sex or for things that their spouse wanted. Now, it doesn't mean that they were steamrolling in their marriages or they didn't take their spouse's desire seriously also, but they didn't place their desires or goals or wishes as secondary to a spouse's. The women who struggled, which was the majority of the women that I interviewed LDS women who'd grown up in the church, who were currently married, and I interviewed them about their premarital sexual experiences and then their marital sexual experiences, including that transition into marriage and into a sexual relationship, and how they experienced themselves, how they experienced desire and pleasure, and just kind of understanding who were the women that thrived, who felt comfortable in their sexuality, and who were the women that didn't, right? Well, the women who struggled more tended to do a lot more self-doubt, tended to not take their own wishes seriously, tended to be more looking to others to be okay with them, looking to their husbands for a kind of validation and approval. And so this sort of external referencing made it so they never actually felt free. Like that they, you know, some of the women would use sex to kind of get attention and acknowledgement, but it wasn't really like, I love sexuality and I'm at peace with myself. It was more that their sexuality was where they were trying to earn something or to feel better about something inside of themselves. But the majority of women were so externally referencing that they felt that being sexual was a way to perhaps earn a place, but it wasn't about a place of freedom or being true to themselves. So it's just an essential question. If you're really going to be, because freedom matters so much to living a joyful life and being willing and able to be close to someone, to have a self to share. And I'm not saying having sex in the way your spouse wants you to have sex necessarily. I mean, having a sense of self to share, to not feel swallowed up by the other person in sex or in any other part of life, but to feel like you really are there as their partner and their equal, right? That's a foundational meaning in good sex. And so a lot of the women that I work with have not really developed a self-reference, in part because women are wired to track other people's desires and feelings. I think often in a way that men are less attuned to because they're just not wired that way. But because we're really good at referencing what other people want, we often betray our own desires or our self-knowledge or a self-reference that's really important for trusting ourselves, for feeling a sense of our own value, of feeling able to settle down inside of our own skin to show up in an authentic way in a marriage. And that includes our sexuality because we are embodied sexual creatures. But this isn't about, oh, this is the sneaky way to get you to want sex like you should. I understand why someone could think that's what I'm saying, because that's so much the messaging that we've gotten. I mean, this is about you being truer to yourself to sort out what you really want. What do you want in your marriage? Do you want this marriage, right? Do you want to develop your sexuality or not? But to start getting clear about who you are so that you can make choices that you are at peace with, that you feel good about, that are about being the person you desire to be on this planet. But that means turning the reference from such an instinctive, external, pleasing one to a deeper self-awareness and self-knowledge. Now, this is not about being selfish. I'm actually going to go to another question here that's similar. Currently taking the Art of Desire course, really loving what I'm learning about me. I have two babies and it is hard to put time into it, though. My husband says I'm on a self-discovery journey and says it's selfish to put time into the course. I'm struggling to want my husband sexually when what I'm receiving is criticism for trying to fix the problem we are having while he's not doing much in his part to fix it. I mean, 100%. If you want to kill a woman's desire, you say the things that that husband is saying. How do I continue to find out about me and my sexuality without pushing my husband further away by making him think I'm being selfish by doing so? So this is like a perfect example of the struggle we can get in, which is, you know, I grew up learning you can either be selfless or selfish. You know, which one do you want to be? You either sort of forsake all your desires or you're a selfish person who wants power. I don't know. I learned some of these things in Young Women's. Okay. So, you know, that's just not, it's not a zero sum game. Okay. And in fact, when we stand up for ourselves, and I don't mean bulldozing. I don't mean whatever I want, I get. You know, I know some people who are so afraid of their marriages being patriarchal that they turn them into matriarchal, demanding realities. Okay, so I'm aware of situations like that. But so I'm not talking about just switching places of one dominating the other. I mean that for a marriage to actually be happy and thrive, and for a sexual relationship to be happy and thrive, you have to make room for two people to belong to themselves while being in the marriage. And that is the kindest thing you can do for the long-term well-being of a marriage. Your husband, it sounds like it's threatening to him for some reason, that you are sorting out who you are, or that you're in a process of sorting out what you desire. Maybe he's afraid if you start to think about what you desire, you'll find out you don't desire him, or you'll find out you don't desire the marriage. That's a risk. I'm not saying that's what's going to happen by any stretch, but you know, the thing that is really scary for us in marriage is to let our spouse have an actual choice. To let them actually decide if it's with us that they want to be. And so when we're insecure, we will often do things to pressure or control or demean or guilt to get the other person to sort of out of obligation love us or have sex with us or be close to us, because we're afraid if we weren't guilting and pressuring them, maybe they wouldn't. But of course, because we want to be free in sex and we want to be free in marriage. Okay, like of course, I don't mean we want to be free in marriage. We want to know that I choose to be here, that it's out of my commitment that I'm here, that I can be myself in marriage. So we can fully commit to a marriage out of our own integrity and still feel free because we know it is our choice. when we are insecure and immature, we will tend to obligate and pressure and say, I don't really have a choice. I promised God I would do this. Now I, or God said I had to marry you. Therefore, I don't have any choices. So we often will do things to constrict our freedom in marriage and turn it more into a prison, but then we will not be happy. And paradoxically, the marriage is much more fragile. This is very true in marriage, but even more true in a sexual relationship. Because if we feel I have to be there, it's been 3 days, he's going to get really upset if I don't, then again, we may go through the motions, but we're not going to feel passion or freedom or comfort or a sense of home. That is what we really long for in good sex. So much of what the course is about helping people find a deeper sense of freedom by being truer to the best in themselves. And so what I would say to this person is, you owe it to yourself, your babies, and the marriage to stand up for your growth, your development, your self-clarity, your strength, okay? Your strength. Strong people don't bulldoze. Strong people are able to love, choose wisely, love their children, stand up for what's good, okay? So your self-awareness is there to help you stand up for what is actually good, what's going to help you thrive, help the marriage thrive, help your spouse thrive. Ultimately, he's just afraid. And so he needs your strength to push back on his fears, because if he prevails in that, your sexual desire will go down, your resentment will go up, the marriage fragility will go up. And that's bad for all of you. Okay. This is another one. I'm sorry about these questions, but they're all the same thing. I'm working on my desire in general, not just sexually. And one thing I really want to do is go on some girls' trips with friends. My husband is not supportive of this. He thinks I'm being selfish and is hurt that I want to go with my friends and not him once in a while. It's important to me, and I'm frustrated that he's not supportive. I sort of feel like I'm only allowed to have dreams and goals and ambitions if they involve him and don't affect him, like if I take a class or something while he's at work. Any suggestions on how to work on non-sexual desires when your spouse is not supportive? So very much in the same theme, which is, if, again, I promise you, because I work with couples all the time, when people can belong to their own lives and to their own sense of who they are, when they're fulfilling the measure of their creation, right? In whatever capacity that is, I don't mean people have to have two careers or anything like that, but that I can belong to myself and develop my goals and have friends and have a life that is rich in its own right. If I can have that and be with you, those are the happiest people. Those are the happiest marriages. People don't want to have to give up their sense of autonomy, their sense of freedom, their sense of belonging to other aspects of themselves to keep a spouse happy with them. And the more they do it, the less and less happy they get with the spouse, the less and less happy they get with the marriage. So to be clear, I'm not saying, you know, just go off and do whatever you want, because no spouse should tell you what to do. So I'm not saying go into an anti-dependent state, but to understand, for the marriage to thrive, each individual must also be thriving. And of course, we make sacrifices. Of course, we're not always thriving in every moment in any marriage or in any point in our lives, but that we understand the importance of the individuality of each person in the marriage, that we're not trying to use or control or curtail the other person just because we're insecure. Okay. One more question on this theme, but a little bit different. I'm 45, healthy, and take no medication. I do lab work every 3 months. Okay, so I take bioidentical HRT, hormone replacement therapy. My once fabulous sexual desire has plummeted over the past 5 years as my husband and I have dealt with many relationship challenges. There hasn't been infidelity, and we've grown to have very different opinions on our roles as spouses, intimacy, parenting, lifestyle, and other key areas of life. I've been in therapy off and on, done a lot to learn and practice differentiation, and still find myself feeling the ick, more and more around sex, I'm assuming. It feels like my desire to have sex with touch, emotionally connect, or even be in the same room as my husband gets smaller with each passing year. What can I do to learn to love and desire him as a whole person when I feel hardly any draw, either physically or emotionally? So what I think's happening is there's been growing resentment, growing self-justification on both sides, and growing division that's driving a hostility or an anger between you that maybe hasn't really been being dealt with out loud and up front. It sounds like there have been open conflicts that you've been, it does sound like you've been talking about your relationship challenges. I don't know if that's been happening in a good therapy or in a good, in a process where you've been able to deal with these differences. But, you know, a lot of times when we're dealing with differences, even if you're honest about them, it doesn't mean that your spouse or you is necessarily going to choose in a way that builds a bridge, that builds deeper understanding. So it's not a guarantee, but a lot of times what happens is people, in the face of their differences, go into deeper and deeper division and deeper self-justification and more resentment about the validation they can't get from the other person. And because of that, they don't feel free with the other person. They don't feel like I can be myself, even though we're different people. I just feel hostility toward you, from you. So I don't want to open up to you. I don't feel close to you. I don't want to bring my vulnerability to you, certainly not sexually, because I don't feel able to bring it emotionally. And so my guess on this question is that it's a co-constructed hostility. It's a co-constructed division where you each kind of participated in kind of pulling away from each other and feeling justified. And you've used the other person's anger and resentment to justify your own. That's my sense. Now, I don't mean that if you were in an open conversation over a long period of time, it would necessarily mean you choose in one another's direction. But that's what I would say, is that you need a good therapy to sort out if you want to choose to work out your differences, to find a path toward each other or not. Okay. Now we're shifting gears a little bit here. This person says, I'm getting stuck with finding meaning frames that work for me in sex. I have a very difficult time getting myself calmed down enough to want sex in the first place, and then discovering meaning frames seems impossible. As I've tried to think and write out what my sexuality wants, it usually comes down to wanting it to be easy and natural feeling, which seems impossible. Okay, although that sounds like really smart. What your sexuality is trying to tell you, it knows, it understands something. So when you say it seems impossible, we'll deal with that in a second, but your sexuality is right about this. It wants to be easy and natural feeling. I very easily feel pressured to have sex from myself, from my spouse, or both. Sometimes I can't tell. How do I get out of my own head enough to desire sex and then go one step further and find meaning frames that work? So I would actually highly recommend to you the new course, Sex Worth Wanting, which is going to be available soon. Chrissy and I need to figure out what that date is, but I think it's at the end of September. You'll be able to start going through the course. So
even better, join us in person in St. George.
Yes. So the online course will be at the end of September, where you'll be able to start going through. And then there is tickets still available for our November live workshop in St. George. So, and what are the dates for the November workshop, Christy?
It's November 6th through 8th. So I'll post a link here in the comments.
November 6th through 8th.
Okay. The online course is going to be great too, but there's nothing that can compare to learning from you in person, as everyone on this call knows. So,
yeah. So I really recommend it for that, because it's very much about how do you get to the place where sex can feel like a place of ease, a place of freedom. So, but your sexuality is right. It's trying to tell you something that matters. It doesn't want all the pressure. But you're saying like, well, how's it possible? Because I know what my spouse wants. And so knowing what they want, whether or not they're even pressuring in the overt sense, because I can track it, I feel pressured. And so I don't feel free. It feels impossible. How do I solve it?
So
first of all, to be true to ourselves, truly, okay, we do have to find a place of calm in ourselves. Like to really be true to the core of who we are, we have to settle down our reactive limbic mind that is anxious and too busy trying to solve things. And so to find the soul of sex, to find this core desire, we do have to learn to settle down together. And so in the Sex Worth Wanting course, I have exercises that are about helping couples learn to truly settle down together, right? To take the time to find a place of deeper ease, of deeper calm, body to body, right? Lying next to one another. And this is just very, very important to take the obligation out of connection, to learn how to handle yourself, whether or not you have intercourse, to learn how to handle your sense of sufficiency so that you can find a place that's an honest connection rather than a connection driven by fear or proving or trying to manage the anxiety between the two of you. Too many couples rush into sex. They decide tonight's the night. It's Wednesday. We need to have it. And so they kind of rush into it. The sex isn't good. It could be maybe painful for her, not enough stimulation to get to orgasm. He may have premature ejaculation because he is also anxious. And these are two anxious bodies trying to have something soulful, and the two don't go together. And so when we don't have that ease between us, the sense that I don't have to manage your disappointment, right? But I can be with you. We can accept each other. Then something more genuine can emerge. It's not a guarantee. It's not like now you'll do the right thing and the feeling will emerge. I don't mean that. But if you can settle down, then something genuine can emerge. A genuine desire to, even if it's to continue to lie next to each other, there's something more connecting. People will say, I feel more connected in that calm than I do when we are anxiously having sex. And so it's really, really important. This is where people make real contact, is when they get out of their reactive, self-proving, anxious minds. And so also, it really matters when you're talking about meaning frames. And of course, in the Art of Desire course, I spend a lot more time just helping you understand how this bridge works. But let me say this much. One important meaning frame is not about serving or producing or taking care of needs or giving him pleasure or even the idea that you must have pleasure. These are all meaning frames that kill desire. One important meaning frame can just be to enjoy your partner. Now, you might be like, oh crap, how am I supposed to enjoy them? So I don't mean you must enjoy them or you have to enjoy them. But if I can calm down enough, is there something that I would just enjoy in being with them? Some way to be with them that I would actually take pleasure in, right? Is there something I could do that would feel genuinely good to me in being with him? So there are lots of, in the Art of Desire course, I will be talking, this is some of the new stuff I'll be talking about, is what are the ways that people create arousal? What are the meanings? What are the dynamics in which arousal and sexual interest is more likely to emerge? And so if you're in a calm mind, you can certainly engage a meaning that appeals to you, that feels like a favorite place to go with your spouse, that is part of creating a dynamic tension between you that is likely to cultivate more feelings of arousal. Okay, so you can do that. But more foundational than that is just learning to settle down enough to be able to make some genuine contact with your partner and some genuine enjoyment of their presence, right? But to do that, we have to get out of the proving mind, out of the demanding mind. Chrissy, are any questions coming in or follow-up questions?
Yeah, someone was wondering, I think you were talking about enjoying arousal. And they said, what if a spouse cannot be in that space without pushing for sex?
They need to learn to not do that. Okay. That's why the Sex Worth Wanting course is important, because I'm really giving both men and women a clear idea of what the process is of coming to something better. And a lot of times, one of the reasons that women stop doing things that actually cultivate their own desire, because one of the things that women generally really that turns them on is to be the turn on, to feel like he desires me, he's drawn to me, I'm compelling for him, he's reaching towards me. Women like that feeling. But when women feel like my husband can't handle being aroused, and if he gets aroused, he's going to want to have sex, they stop doing the things that will invite his attention and his arousal. But then they also kill their own arousal, because they're killing the source of their own. And it makes sense that they're doing that, because again, nobody wants to be obligated in sex. No woman wants to feel that if her husband's getting turned on by her, that she's now going to be obligated. And so, listen, nothing gets me more upset than men who are trying to sell the idea that they can't handle being aroused. Because if they can't handle it, they're never, ever going to have good sex. They have to learn how to handle their own arousal and to enjoy it, even not just bear it, but like actually enjoy arousal, enjoy the uncertainty in it, enjoy the pleasure in it. In fact, again, in the Sex Worth Wanting course, this is very much, I'm like teaching couples about actually cultivating more arousal without it going to intercourse, enjoying the attraction like you did when you were dating. You were reveling in arousal, especially if you're an LDS couple. You're like doing all kinds of things that are cultivating those feelings without going to intercourse. And that's where all the good stuff is. Okay. That's actually building the sense of connection and anticipation and enjoyment without obligation, without it meaning or requiring that you have to have sex because you turned me on earlier. That will kill all playfulness. It will kill the source of, you know, I like you and I like the energy between us, because it's now been turned into something you have to manage. If you're with a spouse who says that they can't handle it, then you need to say, like, for us to have good sex, you need to handle it. Now, in men's defense, I suppose, I think a lot of men have not learned how to be at peace in their own arousal for several reasons. One is that they were often taught that it was evil or not good. And so they were anxious in those feelings. So either trying to suppress them or express them, like, let's solve these feelings of arousal. Or it's connected to fear. You know, if I have these feelings, maybe I will never have a spouse who wants me. Maybe I'll never, ever have the satisfaction of being desired in return. And so the panic I feel about it, I want a pressure for gratification. But if you do that, it always keeps you limited. Because to actually be a good lover, especially as a man, is to be able to handle a lot of arousal in your body and to get better at integrating that arousal, because then you have more control. Not only do you have more pleasure, you have more control. And so you can do more to cultivate and invite pleasure in your spouse without orgasming quickly. Premature ejaculation has to do with a lot of urgency and anxiety within the man. And that anxiety means that he will often orgasm sooner than he wants to, but often because there's too much anxiety in the couple or in the man around his sexual arousal. So an important way to strengthen the desirability of sex and in a couple is to get better at just enjoying sexual energy between you throughout the day, even climbing into bed at night and falling asleep rather than having intercourse. Now, some people are like, no, my spouse could never handle it. Again, if you want really good sex, it means learning to handle it. It's the paradox, perhaps. But the more you don't have to have it, the more sex you will have and the better it will be. Okay.
We have a lot of discussion happening in the chat. Okay. Someone was asking, can lower desire men also benefit from the Art of Desire course?
They can. So I would say low desire men would benefit from both the Art of Loving, the men's course, and the Art of Desire, because Art of Desire is more oriented to lower desire people. Art of Loving is a little more to higher desire. I do reference higher desire in the women's course and lower desire in the men's course. But some lower desire men said they really benefited from taking the Art of Desire course. They could relate to elements in it. I just think that's a piece I should actually add in the workshop too. I think a little bit more about that. I think that, yeah. You know what, Christy? I think we should just do like a, we have a Facebook Live on lower desire men that Christy could post here. But I also am starting to think we maybe just need to do a course about high desire women and low desire men and kind of how that, just how to understand it, how to think about it, and what is often happening in those situations and how it relates to, you know, a lot of times, like I was saying, the turn on for most women is to be the turn on. But if my husband doesn't initiate, doesn't seem to be turned on, wants me to do it, that can be super painful because it's kind of counter to how most of us have either been socialized or how we're wired. I think there is some of both about what the dynamics of good sexuality are. So, you know, there's so much to say. I'm just trying to think about how much to say. So when sex is really good, you have two equals. You have two people that feel they can be there themselves. But often when they do feel clear they can be themselves, then they can play out a masculine, feminine energy that's a part of good sex. Like dance is a masculine, feminine, seductive. A dance is playing out the dynamics of seduction or of masculine, feminine. And so the masculine is sort of doing, the feminine is being. She's beauty, she's radiance, she is the focus, she's the desirable one, and he's the structure, he's the rhythm section in good sex, okay? He is in pursuit, but he is in pursuit in a way in which she flourishes. So a lot of times in our immaturity, we've talked about that men are stronger than women, and therefore women should just fold into men, and men sort of should own women, and women should be there to support men, because those are all immature versions of masculine and feminine. But when we're really true to ourselves, we often then want to play out that dynamic because it's where our sexuality shows up. We sort of polarize and play out something a little more, you know, polarized than what is in fact normal in our day-to-day life. When that's not happening, when you have a lower desire spouse who doesn't pursue, doesn't want to pursue, doesn't want the exposure of it, has too much resentment towards the woman, you know, sometimes the woman then feels unloved and unpursued. And so she's critical. And then he feels more justified in not pursuing because he doesn't want to gratify her anymore. So, there's reasons why this often can happen. There may be biological reasons in some couples, of course, but there's often emotional reasons in which this plays out. And so then it's really quite painful for both people because there's this sense that I can't feel the sense of my desirability in the marriage, or I can't be true to myself or something in who I am in this marriage. So the short is that yes, men can benefit from this course, and I would definitely encourage men to also take the Art of Loving, because there's a lot around men's emotional world and how they relate in their marriages in a way that can kill their libido or kill their desire to be close. So I'm just seeing this person says, it's devastating to hear your spouse say, I don't feel desired or loved by you. My husband has been saying he feels like I push him away, and it's because I feel that pressure. It's hard to deal with that pressure when it's how your spouse feels loved. So one thing I just want to say is, I don't know why the whole thing about feeling loved is, I feel that it's not a great way to think about marriage. Of course, it matters who our spouses are. Of course, it matters what they desire because we love them. It matters to us that something is important to them. But the idea that they feel loved in this way, therefore I have to do it if they are going to feel loved, is a way we can use the idea of love languages and so on to sort of try to obligate or to try to get control over something that we want. And so it's legitimate that your husband wants a good sexual relationship. It's legitimate that it matters to him. But if you want to test your love in this domain, then test it in the sense that you're committed to creating something mutual. But it can't be that it is expressed through you going through the motions of sex, because it doesn't ever work. Because if your spouse is honest and he feels like you are showing up there, but you feel like you're kind of devastated inside, that you're kind of overwhelmed inside because you feel so obligated, it doesn't end up making him feel I'm desired. That's what most people want, is to feel desired, right? I want to feel that you like to be with me. And so when we're so afraid we're not going to have that, and then we are like pressuring and saying, this is my love language and you need to do it or whatever. Well, then if they show up, it doesn't feel like an honest validation, an honest desire. And so to find that honest space, it's better to commit to spending more time together, spending more sensual time together, spending more time calming down together, right? Making space for the relationship, but not pushing it to be more, how to say it, not to produce a particular outcome. Because in that effort to produce it, you kill where the richness actually has the chance to grow. Okay. So survival sex, it's the mediocre quick sex you have because there's no time for anything else, but you know you have to, so you do it when you can. See, this is another thing I get worked up about, some things. Like, so this is one of them. If men had to have sex to survive, okay, we would not ask of LDS men to not be sexual unless they're married. So that is to say, there is no data that men have sexual needs. Now, a lot of men get upset when I say that. But it's just not, it's not true. So the idea that for him to survive, we have to get through the act of sex is going to make you like it less and less. And look, I'm not saying that men may not feel plenty of pressure, embodied pressure, like they want to have it, they feel desire, they've had a stressful day, there's nothing that they would enjoy more than having sex with you. That I totally understand. And I totally understand that it's part of a good life and a good marriage to have sensual, intimate contact, okay? That I totally understand. But as soon as you put it in the frame that to survive, we must do this, or I just have to like put out, okay, even though I hate being here, so that you can manage yourself, it drives a deeper and deeper wedge between the couple. It makes her desire go down even more, and his goes up often because he feels the anxiety. Like, does she really want to be here? And she seems to just be avoiding me and she doesn't really like it. And so it usually polarizes the desire differences in a way that feels really challenging. Like it creates a sex knot that gets really hard to undo. And so we need to be able to value the importance of sex as an important part of a good marriage. But that doesn't mean just any sex or any kind of sex or just putting out. I would say you shouldn't do it. If sex feels like work, if it feels like dread, it's much better to not do it. Now you might be like, oh my gosh, my spouse is going to go crazy. And okay, that, but how to say it? It's not when you go for the survival sex and you hate sex a little bit more, you have to really ask yourself, is this getting us anywhere? How could I be in connection with my spouse? How could I feel an honest connection? Maybe I can choose it because I don't have anything against people sometimes saying like, just tonight, I don't want to have a lot of energy for it, but I'm happy to accommodate you. I'm happy to have you here. I don't mean that you can't sometimes be unequal in your desire, but you're still two willing partners in how you're engaging, even if it's not the great sex you have sometimes. So I don't mean to say that you can't be a willing participant in something that you're not as fully excited about as they are. But the idea that I need to do this so that you survive, as soon as it's a need, it isn't about you. It isn't about your relationship, and it's about managing an emotional reality in your spouse, which is going to make it harder for you to feel free and harder for you to desire it. Okay, let me answer this one. After doing a lot of this course, as well as listening to many Room for Two episodes, I've come to see that while, yes, my spouse has been unfairly pressuring, taking, managing their sense of self through sex, I have also been unfair in suppressing my sexuality. Good for her. I believe I've come by it honestly, inheriting a lot through my family of origin and church culture, but I was definitely one to focus more on the kids when we started having them and neglect not only myself, but my spouse as well. Good. Yes, a lot of people do this, right? Like, you know, sex is for, you know, I work with a lot of people where it's like kids and church and all these things are where the virtue is. And why are you so into this? This is a lesser part of you and of marriage, and I don't need to deal with it. So I think she's saying she was more in that direction. I do want to change that and embrace my sexuality, but it's intimidating because we are not in the habit of showing hardly any physical affection except a hug and kiss before bed and haven't had sex in a few months. It is also legitimately logistically challenging because I'm so in the thick of family life with 4 kids, ages 3 to 8, how can I balance giving myself grace in this overwhelming, overtaxing season of life while also not falling into old habits of neglect and avoidance? How can I make the first move in this direction, especially when I'm literally so worn out each day? So this is what I would say. I think it's better for couples to not have sex dates, but to have dates where they're spending time together, climbing into bed next to each other, lying naked next to each other, just settling down beside one another. And that the date is to have this space to just settle down and be with one another in a sensual way. Now, this might lead to sex because your arousal emerges in that context, but that's not the measure of the success. The measure is that we have time, we've cultivated, we've carved out a space for the two of us to really show up and be present, not have to prove anything, be with one another. And a lot of people think, well, oh my gosh, what if my spouse gets aroused? Well, then what? People have to learn how to handle their arousal, okay? And you can figure out as a couple how you can do that. But the idea that that obligates the other person is an idea that kills a freedom in a couple that they need to be able to be themselves. When couples really enjoy sex, they have the sense that even in the thick of child rearing, even in the thick of the demands of life, even when they're frustrated with each other, that they have this sacred space, that sex is a sacrament in their marriage, in the sense that there is a way that they can come together and feel one another and be with one another without it having to be about producing a particular outcome to manage the needs of the other. Instead, there's a way that we can feel each other, enjoy sexual arousal together, enjoy each other's presence, and go wherever it takes us, which might some days be drifting off to sleep, other days be going to intercourse. But it's being driven by something genuine in the couple that's coming out of the sense of honest connection with each other. That's what the soul of a marriage needs. And so it's learning how to value that honest contact over any particular outcome and making space for that, especially in the thick of parenting. People need that. You know, I mean, one of the reasons that I have been someone who likes sex is because I have been with a partner who has never pressured. And that I remember even in having a baby, like I was so overwhelmed when I had my first child, but I longed for that comfort of climbing into bed next to him and just feeling like I could be my old self, like I could be a woman again, not just a mother. And it wasn't for the sex per se, it was the sense of that I can be here with you and I can be myself and I can feel the sort of care from you that through my body, through our connection, that feels rejuvenating to go handle being a mother again the next day, or probably more likely the next hour at that point in my life. When we have it in the frame of it's another place to produce, we're never going to want it. If it's a place where I can be myself and actually feel that I am being cared for and enjoyed and that I can enjoy you and that there's a space for us where I don't have to prove anything, but we can feel sexual energy with one another, enjoy each other, then you have something that rejuvenates you and allows you to deal better with the demands of your life. So I'm all for dates of making time for each other without the expectation that it's necessarily about intercourse or about producing something. So I know a lot of these ideas are counterintuitive and people fear, oh, if I do that, we're never going to have sex again. But the opposite is true, because what ends up happening is people start creating something that's enjoyable, that's actually desirable, it's actually worth carving out time for, that they start actually wanting to go and have that experience, because when they're there, they feel a deeper sense of sustenance and a deeper sense of belonging to each other. You know, sometimes just in like the Sex Worth Wanting course, I've had people who are like, yeah, but, you know, after men have needs, and let's be honest about that. Needs are things that you must have or else you will die. Okay. And if it were a true need, there would be a lot of dead people at church. Okay. It's not a need. Now, it is a part of thriving. It's a part of a joyful marriage, but you have to come to it through something authentic and learning to settle down and make space to be together in an authentic way is the pathway to something deeper and more sexual. So, Christy, let's just tell people again. So we have the Art of Desire retreat that's in Oregon, September 8th to the 11th.
And $100 off with code DESIRE. And it's an amazing event. If you liked this live, you would love joining us in Oregon. It's beautiful, but the content is even more beautiful. So,
yes. And the food is also incredible. So if you want to get away from needing to cook for 4 days, the food's amazing. Our caterers does such a good job.
The food is amazing and the location is amazing. But seriously, what you'll walk away with is just, I don't know, it's just this rejuvenating experience that I could use every month of my life, or at least every year. And I just wish every woman could experience coming to an Art of Desire event. It is soul sustaining. I need an IV drip of it. It's motivating. You walk away just ready to step into your life and feeling empowered. And I don't know, if you're on the fence or you have any questions about it, email me, because I love this event and I want you to come.
And we also have, if you bring a friend, there's also an additional discount, right, Christy? Is that right?
Yeah, it's an additional $100 off if you bring a friend. And we do have some limited scholarship funding left available, so you can email me about that. We've had some past attendees who want to help make it possible for people who can't afford to come. So let me know about that, if that's standing in the way.
Great. Okay. Thanks so much, everybody. And
wait, to be clear, did you just announce a new course during the live? Because I thought I heard you announce a new course and I would just love to get that on the podcast, a commitment.
I do think that would be good. Now that the book is done, it's time to think about new courses.
Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode, we ask that you please rate, review, and share the podcast so that more people can find and benefit from Dr. Jennifer's work.